This is Business of Home. I'm your host, Dennis Scully. Every week, I'll be speaking with leaders and innovators from all corners of the home industry. My guest this week is textile designer, author, and entrepreneur, Lori Weitzner. It's difficult to sum up Lori's career quickly, from her partnership with textile icon Jack Leonard Larson, to her longtime relationship with Samuel & Sons, to her own wall covering and fabric lines, to her jewelry, and to her book on color. Lori is truly a multifaceted talent. I spoke with Lori about learning to make the best of criticism and setbacks, her strong feelings on performance fabrics, and the future of shopping in the trade. This podcast is sponsored by Universal Furniture. At this year's Fall High Point Market, Universal's Learning Center hosted 15 designer-focused events over 5 days. If you missed an event or would like to see it again, visit universalfurniture.com/marketevents. Didn't make it to their showroom? They're offering virtual walkthroughs of their 115,000 square foot space. Visit universalfurniture.com/fallmarket to book a virtual walkthrough with one of their designer concierge team members to get you caught up on everything that's new. This podcast is also sponsored by Amazon Ads. Is your brand looking for effective ways to reach home and furniture audiences? According to a 2022 Kantar study, 81% of mattress customers discover a new brand or product when they visit Amazon.com. Wherever they choose to shop, Amazon Ads can help brands, like yours, reach home and furniture customers throughout their shopping journeys, both on and off Amazon's store. To learn more, visit advertising.amazon.com/homegoods. And now, on with the show. I had this dream about starting our conversation with this big win order.
Oh, that was great.
Right?
Hell yeah.
Here's the thing. The biggest order in Lori Weitzner's history.
Yeah.
Right?
And Pollock Weitzner history.
And Pollock Weitzner history, which we'll get to. So, I mean, how big was this order?
Oh, it was big. It was
it was so big. It's hard for her to say how big.
No, it was during, you know, and it came through during COVID, which was really like, and it was early in COVID, and we didn't know what was going to happen during COVID, and it was amazing. But the lead up to it was what was really amazing, because they are wonderful clients. They've always been wonderful clients. They usually fall in love with my very expensive, you know, embroideries, and they use little of it. And all of a sudden, one day, I get an email about this particular fabric called Adelaide, and they wanted 10,000 yards. And I was sure they messed up on the zeros. That was actually like 100 yards.
Right. As anybody would think, right? They don't really want 10,000 yards.
And then they
yards.
Said, but of course we understand if you can't do it and meet our what we need, and therefore, you know, they're so honest. They're like, but we love the design and we'll, you know, do it ourselves. We'll find a place and we'll pay you a royalty. And I was like, oh no, wait a minute. I'm going to try and do this. And it took a village, but we did it. And not only did we do it, but I hate to say it, but the weave down, as we call it, looks as beautiful as the original.
And tell listeners what a weave down means. So tell them what you had to do in order, and tell them who the client is.
The client is Wynn. One of my favorite clients of all, especially for hospitality. I shouldn't probably.
Her favorite client of all times, because it is the largest order she's ever been. So yes, they are her favorites. I'm sorry, everyone else, but you place a 10,000 yard order and you too can become
Lori's
favorite.
And it was
Lori's
more than that in the end. And they also ordered other things in the end. So, but, and they also have fabulous taste.
Clearly, they were coming to you in the first place.
Good
so there you go.
Point.
Right? Yes. But so, to tell people what you had to do and what has to happen in a process like this.
Right. So a weave down is a term we use. Basically, it's pretty general, but it's where you take an original fabric, wall covering in our case, and you have to go to maybe a different mill because you need to make really large volume, and it needs to be at a certain price point. And if it's for hospitality, it really needs to have certain performance attributes as well, pass certain fire tests and abrasion tests, et cetera, et cetera. And they wanted to look as close to the original as possible, which is usually impossible. But we did it. And what was really beautiful was it's originally an embroidery. We thought we would have to do like a jacquard or a mock print to make it look like an embroidery. But in the end, we were able to do a real embroidery.
Amazing. Well, I bring it up in part because, of course, it's the largest order that you've ever written. It's the largest order that Pollock Weitzner has ever written. And we should say for listeners, just so they're not sitting there wondering, it was more than $1 million order.
So,
this is a huge, this is a game-changing order. And I bring it up in part because you got this order and you have had the unfortunate experience of visiting a hotel or walking into a room and seeing something that looks remarkably like your wall coverings, right?
Oh, more than once. Probably more than 10 times this has happened to me, yes. And it's not been my... At first I'm like, oh, and then I'm like, what? And it's not. And it's disheartening. It really is.
Of course.
Because it wouldn't be a big deal for them to just come. And if we give us a chance, and if we can't do it, we're not idiots. We'll be like, okay, you know, you want to do it, just pay us a royalty. And to be honest, Dennis, it's not about the money at that point. It's about the principle. These are designs that I work really hard on with my team here in my studio. We originate them. We draw them. We paint them. We copyright them. So it just would be nice. But there are clients right out there who are wonderful, like Wynn, who would never do that.
Right. So Wynn would never do that. So they came to you with this giant order. They say, we realize you might not be able to do this. You magically brought the team together and everybody figured out a way to bring it in at the cost level that they needed, right?
Yep.
And for so many people listening, this is their dream, that they're going to get this big hospitality job and it's going to forever change their business and their life. And so you had that happen.
Yes, but you know, I can never take so much credit. It's years of, first of all, wonderful Vegas rep. It's years of going and meeting and visiting and proving to the client that we can do things for them and creating original things. But you know, it's not like you can just walk in for the first time and all of a sudden something like this happens. I know I look young, ha ha ha. But I mean, I've been doing this a long time.
Well, exactly. So let's get into that. So let's get into how you got to a place where you could do a nearly $2 million order for Wynn and how you first got into being this wall covering maven that you became.
I don't know how many people know this, but I really wanted to be a painter. I didn't even know what textile design was. And I was in Syracuse University and I was working hard as a fine art major. And my professor said, you're never going to make a living as an artist, as a painter.
Mr. Fricky has so much to answer for.
I know.
Right?
I wish he were still alive so I could say, see me now.
Yes.
I hated
yes.
him then, but I honor him now because he said, however, Lori, I think you should become a textile design major because you have a really good sense of color and composition. And I switched. I never looked back. I really wasn't that good of a fine artist. I admit it. And I am so happy to call myself a designer.
Well, and it's interesting that you say that. And I'm jumping around a little bit, but I feel like you have so many different areas and interests within the creative and artistic world that you pour your energies into. For those who aren't familiar with the wide array of things that Lori Weitzner does, I mean, you've got partnerships with Samuel and Son and making these incredible trims and passementry, and you've got partnerships with Artistic Tile, and you've got this jewelry business that you're getting off the ground, and I wish I could help you with. You just seem as though you are boundless in your creativity, and I wonder how you, and I know you told me recently that you actually find more time. You said to me, as you create
time expands?
In the creative part of what I do, it does. It's not linear for me. It's not this 24 hour a day when it comes to creativity. When it doesn't is when I'm dealing with a lot of the other stuff, which I don't enjoy, quite frankly, and try and do as little of it as possible. And that's things like customer service issues or negotiating a contract. However, I made some adjustments in my life with my business so that I wouldn't have to spend as much time as I used to doing the things that not only do I dislike, but am really bad at.
Well, so tell me about that.
The big one was merging my wall covering company with Pollock. I started the wall covering on a $100,000 loan from the bank.
Such a great story. I love this.
It's you know, I was designing for Saco at the time, Saco Hessline.
Right.
It was a German company doing fabric. And I felt the world, or I felt I needed to bring to the world innovative furnishings for the wall. Not wallpaper, but innovative furnishings for the wall. There were other companies doing it that I have admired forever, but I had a different idea in mind. And I went to the powers that be at Saco and said, let's do it. And he said, no. And I went home devastated. And I thought, well, I still really feel like this is something I need to do. But I had never actually like gone to the bank before to borrow money for a business. But someone said to me, just do it yourself. Find a way to do it yourself if you feel that compelled. So I went to Chase and they had a Women in Your Own Business special. And I got a $100,000 revolving credit loan overnight. And I started Weitzner on that. And I made lots of mistakes in those 5 years. In fact, the biggest mistake was my business plan.
Not a small detail, as it turns out.
So I messed up stock levels because the average wall covering order is between 30 and 40 yards, in case your audience didn't know this. And the average fabric order is between 10 and 12 yards. And I based my whole business plan on the average textile order. So it got out the gate amazing and people loved it. And then I ran out of stock like after someone ordered three times. So I had the problem. And then I went back to the bank and they said, no more money for you.
Yeah, you don't seem to be able to count properly. So I'm not sure we want to give you another 100 grand. But yeah.
So Florence Weitzner, may she rest in peace, my mother.
Can't say enough about mothers. We should point out, by the way, Lori is too gracious to say this, but back in the day when Lori went to Saco Hessline and said, I have this vision, first of all, it sounds like they didn't really believe in wall coverings or whatever, lack of vision there. But what was the other component?
Oh, they said something else that was so mean.
Yes. Oh, if we were going to get into that industry, certainly we'd get a man to design the line for us.
Right. And not only a man, but like my nemesis at the time.
Oh, was he?
Just because we were both designing collections with our names on them for Saco, Ulf Moritz, that's who it was. And he's like a genius designer. And yes, this gentleman said, and if... I don't think wall covering is going to be in. And if it is in, we'd really have Ulf Moritz design it, not you. So I was going to leave that out, Dennis. Thanks for bringing that up.
Well, I think it's an important part of the story because...
Yes, people can somehow be me. I've had some of that happen in my life.
People have tried to crush Lori's spirit again and again, but she has come right back. Well, it's funny because when I was thinking about this show and our conversation, I really did think that so much of the thread was asking for what you want, right? And you and I have had that conversation, and I think and I think with the renowned Jack Leonard Larson, a very similar thing, right? So let's
oh my God, that is a thing.
Yes.
Oh, Dennis, you're so good at this,
right?
Because I never realized, but if I think about the major milestones in my career, it came from me asking for what I want, not what I think is possible.
Yes.
And that happened with Jack. So I was designing in Europe, living in Europe, because the market was so traditional. I don't want to say the date because it will everyone will know how old I am. But it was, imagine just Ralph Lauren Chintz and Laura Ashley Flowers, and that was what you had.
Yeah.
So I went to Europe to design because I couldn't do it anything or find the right way in America. The only person at that time doing really beautiful contemporary textiles was Jack Leonard Larson, but I could never get an appointment to see him. And one day I had my pictures of designs that I was doing for a Swiss company called Baumann next to Jack Larson fabrics. So I ripped it out of the magazine And I mailed it to him. That's what you had to do in those days. And I wrote, "Dear Mr. Larson, as you can see, I am next to you in this magazine. I would like the chance to be next to you in person one day. Could I come and meet with you?" And like 2 days later, his secretary, Crystal, called and said, "Mr. Larson will see you." So I met him and it was great. We chatted. He really, really enjoyed my portfolio. And then he called me in again and asked if I wanted to be the design director, that he was going to step back a bit. And he was looking for someone and he thought I was the right person. But at that time, I had built my own design studio and it was happening. And I was designing, like to your point, other things too that related to pattern and color, packaging for Estee Lauder and other stuff like that. And I just didn't want to give it up. But then it was Jacqueline or Larson. So I decided that quote I said to you earlier, go for what you want, not what you think is possible. I went in there and I said, "Jack, this is what I want to do. I want to do autonomous collections for you. I want my name on them." I just decided if I'm going to go for it, I might as well really go for it. And to that time, nobody had been able to get their name on Jack's works, not even like Mark Pollock. So I just said, and I want to travel the country doing trunk shows, even though I didn't even know at the time what a trunk show meant. I said, I want ads with my name on them. And I want to only work for you 3 days a week and keep my studio and do my other work, but I won't do anything that conflicts. And I'm going, blah, 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 blah. You know, I just kept going.
And I want purple M&Ms in my dressing room. And I want...
Pretty much. And then I realized he's not saying anything. And I'm just filling the air with stupid words. He's chewing on a piece of fiber because that's what he did. Right. He ate yarn.
Right.
And then he just looked at me. And I swear, it was just like this. He says, "That sounds fine, Lori." And that was it. And I got to put my name went on the block. And if it wasn't for what Jack allowed me there, I'm not sure what I'd be talking to you today.
We're taking a quick break from the show to remind you about Amazon Ads. Viewers today are cutting the cord and moving to streaming services. According to 2022 Amazon Internal Insights, home brands that used streaming TV ads observed nearly a twofold increase in repeat customer purchases. Put your brand in front of this growing audience as they watch premium Amazon streaming TV content such as Freevee, Twitch, and Prime Video. Visit advertising.amazon.com/homegoods to learn more. And now, back to the show.
That was such an amazing moment. And the fact that you asked him for all of that and he said, yeah. And again, for listeners who don't fully understand the legend of Jack Leonard Larson and the incredible people that came out of that studio, hilariously, your future business partners in Pollock all came out of Jack Leonard, Mark Pollock, crazy? Susan Sullivan, Rick Sullivan. They all came from there, as did so many other incredible people. So what was it about him? Talk a little bit about what made his work and working with him so incredible.
Jack, in a way, was the aesthetist of the world. He just knew what was just the right color, just the right weave, just the right pattern, but it really worked well. And I have to say that Jack could be very difficult and very critical, and sometimes he'd break your heart. And then there were other days where he was incredibly kind and generous and would just out of nowhere leave these beautiful bouquet of flowers for you. But whether he was kind one day or unkind another day, I have to say 99.9% of the time when he critiqued something I did, he was right. And for that, I respect him. And I do believe he was one of the few geniuses in our industry of the textile world. And I pray and hope that future generations of students who are learning about interiors, learning about textile, learn about Jacqueline R. Larson.
Well, and I think so often it's hard to take criticism, right?
Yes. It is. And I'm really sensitive, actually. My feelings get hurt pretty easily. But I'm also tough. And I feel like in these cases, I've got two choices. One, I can just live in my own misery and just feel bad about it. Or I can use it as fuel to kind of either prove people wrong or just go and do it anyway. Like, those are your, what other choices do you have?
And did that desire to prove them wrong and to show them, particularly Sacco?
Oh, that one, yeah, big time.
Right?
So 2 years after I launched the wall coverings, which took off so well in the U.S., mostly because these beautiful multi-line showrooms that I was in through the Bergamo outlet, through Sacco, were willing to take my, like, five designs of wall coverings. Like, they were willing to take a chance on me because they had known my track record from fabric. And 2 years later, Sacco came to me and said, we'd like to distribute your wall covering in Europe.
And did they try to pretend that they didn't know who you... Oh, wait, you're Lori... Oh, you're that Lori Weitzner. My goodness.
I love the people I work with at Sacco. In fact, they might even listen to this podcast.
Sure.
And I just want to say that.
Yes.
I love. But it felt good. It felt really good when they knew they kind of made a mistake there. And then, you know, to be honest, when you distribute, a European company distributes an American brand or vice versa, it has its own set of challenges. So ultimately, when I merged with Pollock and all of that happened, everything changed and it all worked out in the end. But yes, it does feel good sometimes to say, see what I could do, even
yes.
though you didn't believe in me.
Well, an interesting combination of dealing with criticism or dealing with rejection in some cases, but also asking for what you want, and how extraordinary that you did that with Jack and the Jack Leonard Larson. You were the first person that he put your name on some of his line, and that was remarkable in and of itself, and really launched you. The wall covering did really well right out of the gate for you. I mean, that was what was interesting.
It took off really well. I did have to get more money to get more stock, but it took a big toll on me because as I've said, like, I love being creative and it expands energy for me, but I had to now run a company,
right.
And I wasn't really equipped to do that, to be honest. And I enlisted my cousin, who was a great, huge help to me. And after 5 years, he sat me down and he said, listen, you've got a few choices here. Either you get a lot of investment and you hire people to do all this, but you're still going to really be running it, or you merge with the company you really admire, who are good at all that stuff like operations, customer service, finance, and you just focus on what you do best. And I said, you know, there are only two companies I can think of where I would really love to do that. And I just don't think that's possible. And he said, well, who? And I said, well, one is Holly Hunt, but she's got her own brand and she's just so busy and prolific. I mean, remember, this is a number of years ago,
sure.
when she still owned the company. I don't think she's going to be interested in another brand. And I said, and the other is this company I've long admired called Pollock, but they already have they're a fabric company and they have Mark and they have this amazing line of fabric. And I'm not going to go with anyone where I can't do my own fabric line, because as much as I've loved designing for Sacco and for Larson, it's time for me to have my own fabric line to companion with my wall covering line. So I kind of let it go and just started thinking maybe I should just get money. And then I had a lot of offers for money, but nothing felt right. And then one day I was at a cocktail party where Susan Sullivan was, and I didn't know her very well, actually. I've only met her a handful of times. She said, how are you, Lori? And instead of the usual, oh, I'm fine, how are you? I said, I'm not so good. And she said, what's wrong? I said, I'm exhausted. Sometimes I wonder why I started this company. And she said, we need to talk. And I was like, we need to talk? And she said, yes. I go, but Susan, you know, I want also a fabric, blah, blah, blah. And to make a long story short, the rest is history.
Well, and we should point out for listeners, Susan Sullivan is the co-founder of Pollock.
Yes.
And
yes.
So this was a fortuitous meeting.
It's worked out really well. So when you're at a party next time and you're not feeling great,
tell people how you're really feeling, and
maybe
they will merge with you and you'll have a whole new operation.
I don't know. It's a combination of luck too for me, being in the right place, speaking out at the right time, asking for what you want when you know it's probably not possible, and not feeling bad when it doesn't work out because there's always something else around the corner.
Well, it's funny because I remember talking to our friend Michael Cohen, one of the
oh yes, one of the, Michael,
one of the family members behind Samuel and Sons, mm-hmm. And he, as you well know, thinks you hung the moon, but he tells the funny story of meeting you and you all. Oh, well, actually, I'd love to do some trim. Talk
it
about
was,
that.
I didn't even know. Well, we were at the beautiful LA Needler Faucher showroom, which is where I was at the time with Bergamo, and they were with Samuel and Sons. And I did a presentation first of my collection, a trunk show, and then I believe it was Sasha who was there then did a presentation of passementry. I did not know what passementry was at that point in time. And I sat back on the couch next to Michael on one side, who was young, and Sam, his dad, on the other side. And Sam leans over and he goes, "Hey, have you ever thought about doing passementry?" And I kind of looked at him and I said, "No, I hadn't, but I sure am thinking about it now." And I'm very proud that we've been together 15 years doing collections practically every year, and that I was his first license, their first license, and I feel like I'm extended part of the family.
Well, it seems that way. It seems like you're an extended part of it. And you learned what passementry was. And tell listeners, for those that don't know.
It's the jewelry for the home, basically. It's all those beautiful details of trim, of holdbacks and tiebacks and fringe and piping and all those little things you want to add to the detail of a drapery or a pillow or the bottom of a sofa or any decorative element. And interestingly, why I love doing the passementry is because it doesn't have the same limitations as fabric and wall covering. You can be a lot more exploratory. And I have to say that Michael specifically and Marissa, his amazing creative director, wanted me to be outside the box a little bit to design the trim for those who may not necessarily think to buy trim, the more contemporary interior designer, so to speak, because it tends to be thought of as quite traditional. And it doesn't have to be. It can be absolutely so sophisticated and so contemporary. And Marissa, who is the creative director, she's always got like a new way to approach something. And I'll show her what we're working on and she'll say, "I love it. But how about with a little bit of this and a little bit of that?" And I'll be like, "Ah." So I also want to point out that when I do these licenses, it's not just me doing them. It's total collaboration in a way that is extremely rewarding and rich.
Well, and I want to ask you about that, because so many listeners are launching their own fabric line, or they are textile or wall covering designers, and they're all thinking partnerships, these licensing deals. Are they a moneymaker for you? Are they a marketing tool for you? How do you think about them?
I am very discerning of who to partner with. I want it to make sense for both parties. It needs to make sense. What I can bring to the table for them and what they can bring to the table for me. And so if that doesn't align, it doesn't make sense. I haven't yet done a furniture license. I would like to, but it needs to be one where
I'm just putting it out there.
But it has to be where they, you know, yeah, from my side, sure. But also from the furniture manufacturer side, what are they going to get out of it? Like, fair question. I'm right. Not really necessarily been a big 3D designer. I'm more of a 2D, 1D designer. So what can I bring them? What's my idea? Whereas something like passementry, I'm steeped in years of textile and embroidery concepts and techniques that I could bring a lot there. Artistic tile was super cool because it is super cool. In fact, something's coming in January that's gorgeous. But what I love there is they wanted me to take my textile roots and create something in a hard surface. And I love that they thought that way. So it was a perfect pairing. So for all those who are looking to pair, don't just try and do anything and don't be greedy about it. Find the ones that really resonate with what your aesthetic is and what you can bring to them and what they can bring to you. And if that's there, the money will totally come, because it'll be successful.
Right. And the artistic tile, I mean, that's been a really great partnership and has allowed you to work with a completely different kind of material than you're used to working with, right?
And totally. And I'm learning so much from Jill Cohen, the artistic director, about different stones and different tiles. And I went out to their office. I mean, oh my God, I never knew there were so many different stones.
The slab and, yards,
oh,
right?
The slab. Oh my God, yes.
Yes.
And it's beautiful.
It's
and
incredible.
I just got so inspired. So that's been wonderful. We've had great success with the ones we launched a few years ago, and we're launching something in January that I think will be very successful too. So I would rather go deep. I'd rather find those partners that I can design with and go deep with and have an ongoing relationship. So I'm very excited to continue with those. And they only help enhance also the other things like Weitzner, because a lot of times the clients are the same.
Yeah.
So it all kind of works together. It's very nice.
Well, exactly. And that's part of why I wanted to start with that win story. Because that win story, as you made the point earlier, didn't happen overnight.
No.
And it took years.
Years.
Of developing the product, but also just getting in front of that group of people and having them think of you in this way. And hospitality has ended up being a big part of your business, as it turned out.
It has. And what also pleases me is a lot of times now they'll come to me with custom idea that they don't think they know where else to go for, and I can deliver for them. So, but when you say years and years, I mean, I have to, when I travel, divide my time between working on developing new product with artisans in all kinds of places far and near. But then the other half the time, I'll be going and doing sales calls with designers, sometimes in Vegas, sometimes in other places too. So that face-to-face relationship with them makes such a difference, which is why I'm very relieved that COVID is, I don't know what to say about it, but maybe abating, or at least we're learning how to live with it.
Tell me what you get out of the face-to-face calling on a designer, because that's such an important part of getting that feedback, as you say.
Oh my God, what don't I get from it? I mean, first of all, there is an, I don't want to sound too woo, but there's an energy.
We're going to let that part of you come out, Lori. Don't you worry. We'll talk about crystals and healing, and we'll get there. But yes, there's an energy. Yes.
There's an energy that you don't get from Zoom. There's an energy
right.
When you're in person, when you can see every facial expression, where you can actually touch them, give them a hug, hold their hand, see what they respond to, even when they don't say anything, see what they don't, understand why. The more I know my clients, or the more I know my artisans or the mills that I'm working with, the better relationships I have, the better the business is all around. I fear people are now so comfortable with this remote and the Zoom that there's going to be just so much less of it,
sure.
Which is why like we're doing a big thing in Paris in January for Deco Off. I'm also going to Heimtex, which is a textile fair, to meet with mills. You know, I'm going. We got to support in person this stuff.
Well, so tell us what you're doing in Paris. That sounds exciting.
Well, Pollock and Weitzner will be there. We have rented a spectacular apartment on Rue Mazarine, which is in the left bank near all the showrooms. We have an apartment that's gorgeous, and we are going to be showing for 4 days. We're going to be sending out invitations. People can come by for coffee, for champagne, and view our new collections, both Pollock's new collection and Weitzner's new collection. Samuel & Sons, I'm launching a new collection called Bouquet in January, and I'm very excited about that. That's all I'll say about it. It's
okay.
Called Bouquet,
okay.
And it's pretty cool.
And tell people who don't know what happens there, because it's not just you get to go to Paris in January.
Dennis, I don't know if you know the history of Deco Off.
I know a bit about it, but tell me in your own words, Lori Weitzner.
Why it's called Deco Off?
Yes.
Because years ago, there was always Maison d'Objet, which still exists, and many interior designers go to visit. It's a huge trade show with all kinds of products for interiors a little bit outside of Paris. And all the big showrooms like Saco used to exhibit there. And one year there was a hurricane, and they had big tents, and the tents blew, and we lost days of the show. And all the showrooms, all the companies like Noblesse and Dadar and Saco and Zimmer Road and Pierre Frey, I might be getting some of these wrong, but they all were very upset, and they tried to get money back from the organizer. They said no. So they said, you know what? We're going to do our own, and it's going to be in Paris, and it's going to be called Deco Off. Because we're the rebels. And we're going to do them in our showrooms. And people are going to want to come. Interior designers are going to want to visit. Editors are going to want to visit because we're in Paris. Most of my clients, my best clients, my interior designer clients, they come.
It is
one of the most inspiring shows in the world. A lot of good reasons to come to come to Dekoaf and come to Paris in January, even though, watch this segue, Lori, even though I know everyone's feeling a little preoccupied, perhaps, with a slight slowdown in business lately. And there's a feeling out there that maybe because interest rates have gone up or the Fed needs to calm inflation a bit, that they're going to try and slow things down. How do you think about that?
You know, people thought everybody would stop during COVID, and they didn't. And I don't know exactly what's going to happen. I don't have a crystal ball. I'm not that worried about it. What I do see happening, which is interesting, is an uptick in hospitality work. And hospitality was kind of pretty dead during the last few years, and residential was very, very busy. But now it seems that I guess these hotels are realizing, oh my God, we need to renovate and we need to do it now, regardless of what the future of COVID and so forth is. And so that seems positive. And so in this industry, like, I've been in it long enough to know there's seesaws and there's, you have to just ride the waves when you can. But you know, one big order can make all the difference too. So what I feel very proud of, especially with Weitzner, but I think with all of my partner licenses, is they all believe in the relationships between them and the clients and their reps and the clients. And I think that if there's any business to happen, that business is most likely going to happen to those that have really good relationships with their clients.
We're taking a quick break from the show to remind you about Universal Furniture. In need of the perfect piece for your space? Shopping with Universal Furniture makes it easy. With their extensive list of in-stock items, shopping with them guarantees you'll receive your items on time without delays. Visit universalfurniture.com/in-stock to browse their full lineup of available items. Not a To The Trade member? Simply go to universalfurniture.com/join to sign up today. And now, back to the show. One of the things that we touched on earlier and that I think is so significant to point out about your business is that you have so many different artisans and suppliers that you work with. Often, if you talk to a small company that's just getting going, they've got a handful of vendors that are supplying them. You have
a lot.
A lot.
We've got over 80.
You've got over 80 different artisans and suppliers.
I know, that sounds crazy. Yeah.
So tell us why that is. Tell us what all of
why
that
it's
is
crazy.
About. No, but you have so many. You have specific artisans who make the paintable plaster, and you have right. You have
yes.
You have artisans that just make one specific little part of your collection for
yes.
you, right?
And we have this because there's no other way to get the best possible product, and we don't want to compromise. So it sometimes takes an army. I mean, in the case of, we do these handmade, hand-woven abaca textile in the Philippines, but then it has to be paper-backed in Japan because the paper backing in the Philippines till now, there can be Boeing, and we don't want to have Boeing for our clients. So we have to send it to Japan. So it's kind of complicated. And people say, how do you find your sources? I think that's the most common question asked to me. As if there's a one answer that's quick and easy. There isn't. It's taken years of just meeting and talking and networking and shows and travel and all of that.
So I asked that question about your myriad of vendors and suppliers in part because a group just got back from High Point, and the buzz from High Point was, oh, supply chain, those issues are getting resolved and getting behind us. Do you feel like supply chain is not the hot button issue it once was? For you?
It's not as hot.
Okay.
One area where it has been a disaster is in outdoor yarns, because everybody has been wanting indoor-outdoor.
Sure.
And there's only so much of that yarn. So that's the one area where I still think it's really a big problem. But other than that, I would say lukewarm.
Okay. So speaking of that, your take on performance fabrics, Should they take over the world? I mean, should everything be a performance fabric, Lori Weitzner? I ask you.
And I tell you, absolutely no.
Okay.
Please,
okay.
No. And please, everyone, silk, wool, cotton, linen, hello. And all these tests that we are now required, these fire tests, I forget what the one that's starting in California now, they're not helpful. And I don't think, you know, I know that we could get into a whole other conversation about sustainability, but I'll just say this. What one may think is better for the environment may find actually not after really looking at it. And especially with all these finishes you need to do on things where you wouldn't even need a finish on wool, as an example, in a general case. No. I mean, there's a place for that.
Sure.
Of course, you can't put, you know, silk in pouring rain. And there's definitely a place for outdoor fabrics, but please let them not take over the world, please. We just launched a beautiful line of luxury outdoor fabrics, and they're great and they're doing well, but we also launched them next to a ton of cotton velvet and a bunch of linens and some woolies, you know, so there's always a balance.
Yes, and that's all we're asking people is just find the balance in this. Will you please? I mean, come on. The other thing, and I'm curious how you think about this, showrooms. Earlier on, we were talking about Saco and Bergamo, and you were in the Dongia showrooms for a long time because of all of those different relationships and who you were working with. And the Dongia showrooms back in the day were the hot spot to be, and all the cool kids were coming to the Dongia showrooms. And then sadly, they weren't coming there as much over time, and we don't need to get into all the challenges that happened there, but sadly, that sort of showroom went away, that particular one. But I wonder, when you think of wall covering especially, do you feel, oh, I need to be in a place where people can come and see that, or how do you think about it?
Well, that's a really good question and a discussion we're having internally at Pollock and Weitzner right now for the Weitzner wall coverings. We have a hybrid situation with our sales network. So we're in some showrooms and we have our own reps in some places and we are with independent reps in others. And I do believe the hybrid is the right way. But I was concerned when we were not in certain showrooms how the wall covering specifically would show. We do make these presentation boards every time we launch a new collection, and I know our reps take them out. I could make a fight. We need them in showrooms so people can see them, but then someone could argue, well, but not as many people are going to showrooms anymore anyway.
Yeah.
So I think that for me or for Weitzner, the future is to spend money on augmented reality to be able to show them the real material, but then to show them on a computer what it will look like on a wall in a room with a sofa and a light. So I think the interior designer has to tell me more than I tell them if it affects sales. If they're not seeing it hung in a showroom, do they still feel comfortable ordering it when they see a picture of it? So far, it's been okay.
But you're imagining in the future, technology playing a bigger role in how people in how people see this. And can you get people out to Vegas? Can you say, hey, do me a favor, go see the Wynn Hotel out in Vegas, and you'll see my work. Is that something you try to do if you know you've got a great installation somewhere?
So, yes, I do. In
okay.
fact, you know, I have a great installation in my home, in my hallway, of one of my favorite products. It's called Mason, and it's a beautiful handmade paper tile. And so I'm intentionally having people come during BDNY. I have a pop-up of my jewelry in my apartment.
So you're having people come over to the house so that they can, okay.
Yeah, so when they walk in, they can go, oh, that's so beautiful. What's that on the wall? And I can say, oh.
Oh, so glad you asked. That's Mason. Let me tell you a little bit about it.
Exactly.
That is very clever, actually, because that is a product you do need to see to believe, in a way.
And once you see it, you're sold, but you need to see it.
That's the conundrum.
I know. But if you were to tell me, Dennis, that everybody's still going shopping the showrooms all the time, then I'd have to go back and fight with Brad to say, we need to be in showrooms again for the wall covering. But that's not happening either. I don't know what's happening. I don't know anymore how designers are shopping, because it seems like they're shopping in so many different ways. And the younger ones are shopping differently than older ones. So I feel like we have to listen more than make decisions for a little while. and understand from our reps what tools they need and make sure we provide them with the best tools possible and go from there.
You used the word hybrid earlier, and what we're hearing more and more in offices and in commercial buildings is that perhaps hybrid, whether it's 2 or 3 days a week that people are in the office and the other time they're working from home or what have you, that's going to play out over
right.
the next year. And we're going to see what society really looks like when all of that becomes normal. And as you say, obviously they're not all going to design centers, or everyone would want to be in those design centers. And there are still so many people that don't. One of the places where people were putting product, for better or for worse, Material Bank, the ability to order online, get those samples sent to you. How do you think about that operation?
There are challenges for sure with it, because it's a secondary library for us, and also it costs a lot of money to send those samples out. And I'm not sure how much we're getting back on the sales side, like the return on that. So I'm from the old school. I just want to get the samples in our clients' hands directly, where there's a human who's going to help and follow up with them. But certainly this industry used to be there's one way to do things, and that's how you do it. And I've seen over the years that is so not the case anymore. And there are many ways. And maybe it's really not just hybrid in terms of how we sell, but hybrid in terms of depending on the type of company you have and ethos and product. I don't know.
No, I mean, that's the thing. Your product is complex. And as you were just saying, this great if some people are going to come by and see the new installation during BDNY, but so much of your product needs a bit of an explanation, or let me show you what this paintable plaster can do and the different ways you can gold leaf it, you can paint it, you can do all these other things. And I'm not sure myself how you do that in 2023 and 2024 when we are out there thinking about this new landscape, and everyone's gotten over COVID and they're letting us come see them and they're returning to showrooms. Where are they most want to go to learn about product? Because that's what so much of this is really learning about this product.
I think it's back to the rep. I think we have to have the best salespeople in the world who know how to speak to our clients and where our clients trust them. And the biggest compliment is when a client calls our rep and says, I need a scheme and I need it quickly. Can you pull it together for me? And relying on them for information, for education, for aesthetic help and support. And I think that's very similar to, you know, I'm lucky because I'm working with lots of different companies. It's very similar to how the other companies I know and I'm working with handle it. That's all I know right now. And I think we also all want to know. We want to know. We want one answer. We want to know this is good for the environment or bad. Or we want to know this passes and this doesn't. I think we have to be comfortable with just not knowing how certain things are going to go with how we sell in the future. Whether it's Material Bank takes over the world, maybe not. Or multi-line showrooms, there are just a few great ones left. Or maybe there's a whole new kind of design center concept where you go there and you're entertained for hours. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd be into that idea.
it's interesting because, I mean, the whole Peter Marino doing Tiffany's.
Tiffany's.
Right? Which, I mean, we were talking about. Mm-hmm. And what's Peter Marino going to bring to this legendary brand that itself felt it needed a refresh or some new thinking?
I'm all about experience, experiential, and how we can incorporate that into what we're doing in our daily lives. So if someone can come up with something clever there, I've got some of my own ideas where I'm working on related to my book with the color worlds that might be compelling for getting people to come and experience something and feel it and be immersed, because you can't be immersed on a laptop and you can't be immersed, you know, just going to a showroom where you just see them hanging on the wall. There's got to be more. There's got to be something more dimensional.
What do you want to do with color?
It's so not completely solidified, but I wrote this book, Ode to Color, that of course you know, and it's based on these 10 worlds of color. And then I did this exhibit about it in Venice. And now my idea is to bring these 10 color worlds to life in a kind of retail concept where you come into a neutral space and you walk in and you are completely immersed in everything that's, for example, Fragrant Woods, which is one of my worlds, the furniture, the scents, the vases and the flowers, but everything in it is for sale. You're immersed and you see if this feels right to you, if intuitively you connect with this. But I have this opportunity now with Google. I'm participating in Google XI in the end of February, and I'm recreating this exhibit with, but I'm creating also these eating spaces for people where they're immersed in two or three of the color worlds. So there's something to coming back to ourselves, coming back to touch, to smell, to taste, to the immersion of all our senses. And somehow we need to take that and bring it back into our industry.
So we should point out, and you mentioned it briefly, that you met the folks from Google at the Biennale.
No, I met them after, but not there. I met them through it, though, because they saw my video. So I did a quick video about the exhibition I did there through the European Cultural Center. And, you know, it's funny, Dennis, I was debating whether to bring a filmmaker and pay to have someone film the making of the exhibition and what it meant. So I decided last minute to do it. And Jen Cox, she went and came and filmed it and did just like a 1 minute video. But it totally sums up what the concept of this exhibition was and is, because it's still going till the end of November. And by just that 1 minute video, so many opportunities have come, including this big one for Google.
Interesting. Okay. So that's how they learned of it. And now they are partnering with you on this. And what I love about it, again, is this giant tech company wanting to do something in the real world and wanting to, and as you say, what can you learn from this and bring back to our industry, which isn't always on the cutting edge, as we know.
Yeah.
But that needs to figure so many things out. We need to figure out how we are going to engage people with all of this, right?
Absolutely. We're so antiquated, our industry, in so many ways. And yet, we don't want to be high tech in a lot of ways. It's very tricky, our industry. But I love it, and I wouldn't choose another one.
Well, and just by good fortune, you got turned towards this industry. And as you said earlier, you are a designer, and that's what you were meant to be.
Absolutely. And people say, oh, Lori, you know, of course you're an artist too. And I'm like, I don't see myself as an artist. I see myself as a designer, but I don't see that as less than. It's just different. Because with design, I'm always thinking about how other people are responding to what I'm doing. Whereas with the fine artist, you don't care. And that's the difference that I like.
That is the big difference. Lori, we've got to go, but thank you so much for making time.
Are you kidding? Thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Dennis Scully.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to keep up with the latest design industry news, visit us online at businessofhome.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, browse job listings, and join our BOH Insider community for access to online workshops, a free print subscription, and much more. If you have a note for the podcast, drop us a line at podcast@businessofhome.com. If you're enjoying these conversations, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps others to discover the show. This show was produced by Fred Nicolaus and edited by Michael Castaneda. I'm Dennis Scully. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next week.